Ma phaleshu kadachana means at any point in time, you're not eligible to be the cause of the fruit of your activity. You cannot manipulate the outcome of your decisions or of your work. This is a very important thing to understand. Throughout this life, we try in many, many, many ways to act in such a way that we can predict the outcome. And something that we have learned in our lives is that we cannot predict the outcome. In some cases, for example, we don't know where life is going for us. We don't know what actions we have performed in our previous lives by which this body has appeared. And even in this life, we don't remember necessarily. Or we act in sort of ways without knowing how those outcomes will manifest. On the smaller scale, we may be able to predict some outcome, right? If I walk out on the street and slap a fellow randomly, I may be able to predict some outcome. But sometimes we may be surprised, right? We think he may slap us back, but he may stab us or something. We may be surprised. Or they may not even say anything or whatever. However, that is just the trick of illusion. When we start thinking that I can fairly predict certain outcomes, or I can cause certain outcomes to happen, that's the trick of Maya, which makes us believe that we are perhaps the causes of the outcomes of our lives. So from a karmic perspective, we say, you are what you do. So in one sense, I am causing the outcome. That's how it seems, but according to this section and this understanding, we have only the freedom to make a certain decision, to decide on a particular thing. Or said simply, we have the freedom in a limited way to make a particular choice. Having once made the choice, we do not have the freedom or the ability to say what kind of outcome should come from it. So quite often we use the example, when I buy a ticket to go from Chicago to, let's say, New York, I can choose to buy the ticket, I can choose to show up at the airport, I can choose to sit on my seat in the plane. Having once done that, after that, I don't have much choice, right? The plane is going to New York. Even within the plane, I have some restricted movement. I cannot tell the pilot, I need your seat. The view is very good from here. We could do certain things by which the plane may not go to New York, right? It might go to Guantanamo Bay for us or some other place. We may get incarcerated as terrorists because you caused a little nuisance on the plane. But in general, we have no freedom to dictate the outcome of where the plane should go. But in general, why is it important to know this? Said simply, the reason we want to know this is because we have been living a life of we've been misdirected, knowingly or unknowingly, and we are constantly trying to manipulate how our future should look like. And it's a very frustrating experience. It is frustrating because no one, even in their right mind, can predict the future. But we try in many ways to predict the future on the basis of our current behavior. If I study well, I graduate with whatever honors, then I can fairly predict that I'll get a good job like that. Or I've invested so much money in the stock market. I manage certain models of prediction based on previous behaviors. I try to index it with how the market is going, and I can predict how it does. But even after so many mutual fund managers and stock managers who are experts at making computer models about how certain stocks will behave, it is a known fact that a chimpanzee can be as good as picking a stock as a stockbroker. Because there is so much randomness and variability in the markets. It's very difficult to predict how a particular stock will behave. Similarly, it's very difficult to predict how material energy will react to our activities. Unless one has a whole different vision of things. If one has a vision that this energy is actually Krishna's energy, and Krishna's controlling that energy, but Krishna's also controlling me. And I have a particular path to traverse within this energy in such a way that it can become predictable. It's not that I now suddenly have this secret of how I can manipulate material energy, but now I have the secret of how material energy is controlled by Krishna. Daivi hi esha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. The word duratyaya means very difficult to traverse. Therefore, we're always faced with uncertainty in whatever we do. We just cannot predict the very next moment either. We can say in the next 5 minutes, nothing extraordinary may happen. Which is true in the sense within our limited context, in let's say within this room, we may be able to predict that nothing extraordinary may happen. We could be wrong, but with some, I guess, probability of surety, we can say when nothing happens between 7:30 and 8 o'clock usually, even for some activity to happen, most people are asleep, so not much can happen. But we cannot say beyond this room that anything extraordinary cannot happen. We have no purview into it. We don't know in the building next door, in the next suburb, in the next city, next country, whatever. We have no ability to predict whether something extraordinary will happen or not. And we also don't know what is extraordinary. I mean, for most of us, staying awake through class is extraordinary. I mean, somehow if we make it, that's really good. So then, why is it important to know? Because we are within the material energy. And we have been making all sorts of choices. And the outcomes of those choices have been karmic reactions. Karmic reactions means changes of bodies. You change from this body to that body, then from this body to that body, within this species to that species, and it's been going on perpetually. And without developing this proper understanding here that's given in the Bhagavatam, the same thing will continue. Because the same thing is continuing, the human being has one experience in this world, and it's called boredom. Because it's the same thing happening again and again and again. It's called boredom. And if we notice, all that we try to do from morning till evening, is try to break free from that boredom. So we have enough things to keep us busy. We have to post on Facebook every 30 seconds, just so that, or we have to keep checking if someone else has posted anything interesting like that, just to break away from boredom. Because it is so repetitive, material life. Now, interestingly, spiritual life is also repetitive. At least that's what we're doing, right? We're practicing. Practice means repetition. Without repeating, we cannot practice. So it's the same thing again and again. That is in the stage of practice. But in the stage of what we call perfection, the activities don't seem repetitive anymore. Because one goes beyond the mechanical execution of things into the experience of relationship with Krishna. So then there's no sense of repetition. At a lower level, the animals don't get bored. Also, they do the same things. Ahara, nitra, bhayamaithunam cha. We don't find the lion sitting together and saying, man, I'm bored. What would you like to do? I don't know. What would you like to do? Let's go run about for something. There's no such thing. Because they don't have the sense of boredom or the idea of repetition. It's their nature to be like that. On the other side of the continuum, in repeated activity or in repetitive activities, there is no boredom because there is taste of relationship with Krishna. In between is this sadhana stage where there's a little mechanical experience. Oh man, the same thing again. I have to get up again for Mangala Arati. Chant the same rounds again. Same 16. Can it be 4 today? 2 tomorrow? Maybe once in a while 16. No, it's the same thing again and again and again. And it becomes boring if it does not have the ultimate purpose behind it. If we know the purpose, then it's not boring. There is something to anticipate within it. So it's important we understand that Krishna is the source of the living entity, who we are, and the material energy. And all that we see is the energies interacting with each other. Purusha prakriti sthohi bhunkte prakriti jan gunan. This Purusha, who is the living entity. Of course, in the scriptures, Purusha has different connotations, just as Atma has different connotations. Krishna is called Parama Purusha, to distinguish Krishna from any one of us as the living entity. And when it is very clear in context, Krishna is also called Purusha. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Purusha Prakriti Stha. That means the living entity, who's the enjoyer, is situated in the material energy. Bhunkte, he enjoys. Prakriti Jan, things that are born out of material energy. And this whole feeling that I am creating something, I am making something happen, he says, Jan Gunan. This is the modes of nature that actually are at play. And I believe, oh, I am making it happen. Karanam gunasangastya. And gunasanga is when we become attached to how the modes of nature are playing out. Because we want to experience enjoyment, bhunkte. But the outcome is sad asad yoni janmasu. The only thing that comes from it is birth in different kinds of species. It is meant, the verse is described so the person who's studying this verse can understand that we as the enjoyers really do not have any jurisdiction over material energy. But we are constantly trying to manipulate it for our enjoyment. This is that illusion. Oh yeah, yes, we can. We can try, and sometimes it works. So we feel we are controllers of material energy. In fact, there are persons who become controllers of large groups of people, even nations. Still, they're under control of the material energy by the process of birth and death, old age and disease. So the demigods are praying that we are approaching Lord Vishnu, who is the cause of us, the living entities, and the cause of the material energy, and he himself is situated beyond these. In that sense, he is transcendental. He's transcendental, and therefore he appears within different species as incarnations at will. Svamayaya. And he appears among the devas as Vamana, among the rishis as Parashurama. Tiryan, the word Tiryan means four-legged. Tirya means four. Tiryan, among the four-legged, as Nrsingadev and Varahadev. Nrishu, within the human beings. As Lord Sri Krishna, Lord Ramachandra. And it says, Nitya Eva, again and again, constantly, eternally. Kritavatara Tanubhi Svamayaya. The reason is Svamayaya is he can appear in any species, in any circumstance, at will. We don't have that. We don't appear in this human species at will. We are forced by the laws of nature. We can't choose what eye color we would like. We cannot choose what skin color we want. We cannot choose our parents. We cannot choose our neighbors. We cannot choose beyond the choice that I already made in my previous life of behaving in a certain way by which I get this body. That choice I have. How I get it or what I get is not within my choice. Unless I know the path to move out of this material energy. That's through Bhakti Yoga. So he says, Kritvatmasat Pati. Pati means protects. The reason Krishna appears in the different avatars is to protect his devotees. Paritranaya Sadhunam. Paritrana is to give his association, to purify further. So it's not just avatars that come on a scheduled basis, but even in the life of any one of us as practicing devotees or a devotee who calls out to Krishna, Krishna appears. Krishna appears to us in many ways. Within our day-to-day context, he appears to us as realizations. He appears to us as insight from scripture. Right? That's why Bhagavad Gita, each time we read, is a different experience. And depending on what we are dealing with, the Bhagavad Gita has a particular way in which it reciprocates with us. Or the Bhagavata. Krishna appears as his devotees, as the deity, as is inspiration from within, as knowledge from within, as Paramatma. In different ways, he appears for Pati, for protecting us. Most importantly, Krishna's interest. Of course, he protects the body, no doubt. But in more importantly, Krishna's interest is in protecting our Krishna consciousness. Because that is more valuable. If you have Krishna consciousness, or we say if you have, or we're developing our love for Krishna, Krishna will always preserve that. And if we are lacking in it, he will bring to us what is necessary. Because he also likes to interact in a reciprocal sort of way. And then he says, the demigods say, Tameva devam vayam atma daivatam. Before we get there, in Pati, where he says Pati yuge yuge, the Srimad Bhagavatam has one verse which is considered the Paribhasa Sutra or the pivotal verse on which the entire Bhagavatam is resting. And that is Ete Chamsa Kalapumsa కృష్ణస్తు భగవాన్ స్వయం. ఇంద్రారి వ్యాకులం లోకం మృడయంతి యుగే యుగే. దట్ కృష్ణ ఇస్ ది ఫౌంటెన్ హెడ్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ ఇన్కర్నేషన్స్. ఏతేచ, సో ద లిస్ట్ దట్ ఈస్ గివెన్ బిఫోర్ దోస్ వర్స్, దట్ వర్స్ ద లిస్ట్ ఆఫ్ అవతార్స్ గివెన్, 25. And the conclusion is all of these incarnations are but portions or portions of plenary portions of Krishna. Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he appears within this material world in a varieties of incarnations again and again, millennium after millennium, simply to protect Indra or the demigods from Indra Ari, all the enemies of Indra. Indrari Vyakulam Lokam. Indrari Vyakulam, the word Vyakula means eagerly anticipating or very eager for, or in full eagerly waiting in anxiety. Lokam is this material world. So there are many forces that obstruct the living entity from being fully from fully experiencing the mercy of Krishna. So Krishna comes again and again to relieve us of that distress, because without Krishna's intervention those distresses cannot be relieved. We try many ways to relieve ourselves of many distresses, and after trying, after hearing so much also, we have a tendency to very quickly manipulate things. But we have an experience that after trying so much, when it doesn't work, we come to Krishna and says, please help me. Please help me. Without your help, without your intervention, or without your mercy, I am not able to do anything. So they say, Vrajama Sarve Sharanam Sharanyam. Vrajama, let's go. Let's go to Krishna, Sharanam, and take his shelter, because he's Sharanyam. He's the only suitable personality who can give shelter. Svanam sano dhasyati sham mahatma. Svanam means unto his devotees. Krishna is also very eager. Yesterday we were hearing that Vatsalya, feature of Krishna, is an overriding feature. That Krishna's Vatsalya is of such strength. Vatsalya means the loving propensity to take care of his devotees is so strong that it supersedes all other qualities. And similarly, the love that the devotee carries for Krishna is so strong that it can supersede or overpower what is called Krishna's Ichha Shakti. Krishna's Ichha Shakti. That means he has the ability to cause anything to happen by will. Once he thinks this should happen, that is bound to happen. But the devotee's love is stronger than that. And sometimes when Krishna wants something to happen, it doesn't happen. The particular context given is Krishna was one day joking with Rukmini Devi. And he goes through a whole long list of his disqualifications to marry Rukmini. He says, we don't belong to any Varna. There are so many qualified kings. Look at me. I ran away from these great kings and I'm hiding in the ocean. Because he built Dwaraka in the ocean. I'm hiding in the ocean, etc., etc. He gives a whole long list of things. And his whole intention is to make Rukmini feel a little teased. And then he wants her to become angry at him. Because he wants to enjoy that. But, interestingly enough, Rukmini doesn't become angry. She faints. And Krishna, oh, what happened? I thought I'm going to incite a little anger in you and just tease you. But she behaves in a totally different way. So Krishna's desire to see her angry was not fulfilled. And is described by the Acharyas that Rukmini's love is so strong that Krishna's Ichcha Shakti could not work. Of course, then she comes back and says all these beautiful things in response to him. She says, yes, your Varna is not clear because you don't belong to any of the Varnas. And you're hiding in the ocean. It is also true. Actually, in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains, though you're hiding in the ocean of the devotee's heart and you're always anxious because you're afraid that your devotee may not stray away from the path of bhakti. So you're always anxious, etc., etc. They're very beautiful descriptions. So Svanam means unto one, his own devotees. Krishna has this sense of what he says, belonging or relationship. He identifies with the devotees as, these are mine. Of course, all living entities are his. There's no doubt about it. But according to the disposition of the living entity, there is a sense of reciprocity. When the devotees come to Krishna and says, you are mine, for Krishna says, you're all mine. And if someone says to Krishna, you're not mine, I don't care for you, but Krishna also says, you're still mine, but I have to reciprocate with you in such a way that your desire for being away from me is fulfilled. So he says, Svanam Sona Dhasyati. Dhasyati is to give. He gives Sham. This word Sham means good fortune. The good fortune is the shelter of Krishna. It's not the material goods that we may have. Generally people think, if I get something material, that is good fortune. So that good fortune has a characteristic. It comes and goes. We have more experience of it going than coming. But the sham that's being talked about here is the feeling of protection from Krishna. Just this morning we're hearing Prabhupada speak that he was talking about this verse about dogs, hogs, camels and asses. And he was describing dog mentality. And he said a dog that does not have a master is always in anxiety. But when we feel the protection of Krishna, then we know that we can go through any difficulty of life. In fact, we see in the Bhagavatam all these beautiful examples of personalities who had the experience or feeling of Krishna's protection. Not in a very imaginative or imaginary way, oh, I think I have protection. Not like that. In a very tangible way. That Krishna's protection is there. Then they can go through any difficulty. Queen Kunti, she went through all of this difficulty. In fact, she says, more of it, please. Or Prahlad Maharaj, the Pandavas, Draupadi, etc. The whole long list, Ambarish Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj. Because that sense of Sham, the good fortune of having Krishna's direct association or contact with Krishna is very palpable, very clear. So, I mean, I didn't necessarily go through all these verses for a particular reason, because I didn't want to make it too technical. But I covered these verses within the discussion, where Krishna is, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavaha, Mata Sarvam Pravartate. Everything spiritual and material comes from Krishna. And it's, Krishna says, Iti Matva, one who knows this, Bhajante Mam, he worships me. And he also describes how that worship is done. Buddha means one who has this knowledge. Bhava Samanvita. Samanvita means full of. Bhava Samanvita is that he has ecstasy in his heart to serve me. Because now we know who is the cause of everything. without knowing who the cause is, there cannot be ecstasy in the heart, because we always think we are the cause. When something wonderful happens in our life, we are the cause of it. And when any distress comes, we very easily accede that position to someone else. You are the cause of my problem. In fact, you are the cause of all the causes of my problem. I am the cause of my enjoyment. You are the cause of my suffering. This is not. Krishna is the cause of all causes. And Krishna is not the one who's causing distress or happiness in anyone's life. Krishna is the cause in the sense that he has created these material laws. And how we interact with this material energy decides what kind of outcome we will get from it. So in the life of great sages, even if the outcome is bad, they're not seeing it that way. Even if the outcome is good, they don't see it that way. We see it that way because we think we are the causes of it, causes of our outcomes. And these two energies, the superior energy, that is the living entity, and the inferior energy, the material energy, they're constantly interacting with each other. Apareyam itastvanyam prakritim vidhi me param bhuta bhavasa vidhi me param jiva bhuta mahabaho yayedam dharyate jagat. I have another energy, the superior energy, the living entity, who's constantly manipulating the material energy. So that's what's actually happening. It's two energies of Krishna. By under Krishna's, what we say, jurisdiction or oversight, upadrashta anumantacha, Krishna is overseeing everything and sanctioning this energy to interact with that energy, and that energy to beat up this energy. Because that's usually the reaction from the material energy, we get beat up. Krishna is only sanctioning, saying, well, you don't know how to work with fire. Right? We don't blame the fire. Anyone, when cooking in kitchen, got a burn? Yes. Do we blame the fire? Yes. We shouldn't. We blame the fire. Why are you so hot? We don't blame the fire. It's just that we didn't know how to interact with it. Either we were negligent, or we were distracted, or we had more confidence in our cooking than we really had the skill for it. Somehow, correct? But we never blame the fire. We always take responsibility. Oh, I didn't notice that it was too hot. Similarly, the living entity interacts with fire-like material energy. But the problem is we always blame the energy. It's how we are, we don't know how to interact. And so we are supposed to learn. It's called Jnana Chakshu. Knowledge is supposed to open our eyes to how to work with, how to interact with material energy. And that's what Krishna wants us to learn. So he's overseeing it and sanctioning our actions. Okay. Any questions, comments? I don't feel compelled then. All right. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Himanshu, has this been stopped?